From Spark and Anvil and Discreet Quest, this is Sorti, the set curator, in Chapter 1 of the Discreet Quest cast. This drama uses an AI-generated voice, voiced via Gemini 2.5. On the longest table in the Discreet Quest workshop, a marmot tween named Sorti unrolled a mat with two large chalk circles on it and began dropping acorns into them, one at a time, saying nothing at all. Two kids leaned in to watch. She had labeled one circle red and the other round, and she was working through a small heap of buttons, beads, and dried berries. A red bead into red, a round wooden button into round. Then she picked up a small red marble, held it a moment, and set it precisely where the two circles crossed, the narrow lens of overlap in the middle. "You put it in both," the girl said, half accusing. "I put it where it belongs," Sorti said. "It's red and round, so it goes in the one place where red and round agree." She tapped the lens. "Everything else in the room fits somewhere on this mat. Red not round on one side, round not red on the other, both in the middle. And the things that are neither," she flicked a green pine cone onto the bare canvas outside both circles, "sit right here, in the open, belonging to no group at all. That's still an answer. Being outside every circle is a real honest place to be." She sat back and looked at the filled mat, every region occupied. "I didn't do anything clever. I made two groups and asked each thing a single honest question. Which circles are you in? Both, one, or none? That is the entire trick. Everything harder than this is only ever that, done more carefully."
Sorti learned to sort before she knew it had a name, and before she knew it could hurt. Her family, back in her home village, were the ones who put away the autumn harvest. Root vegetables in one cellar, grains in another, dried fruit in a third. Simple work, until the year the fields gave up a strange, knobbly squash that was somehow both a keeper vegetable and a thing that dried beautifully. The elders argued over it for an hour. Cellar one or cellar three? Choose wrong and half of it would rot before midwinter. Little Sorti had sat underneath the sorting table with her arms around her knees, listening to the grown-ups get louder and sharper. It felt to her like the squash was a problem with no correct answer, like the world had handed them something broken, and now everyone was angry, and she was too small to fix any of it. Her stomach twisted into a hard little knot. Then her aunt knelt down beside the table, swept a patch of flower dust smooth, and drew two overlapping loops in it with one finger. "Keepers here," she said. "Dryers here." And she set the knobbly squash right in the place where the loops crossed. "It's in both, so we take a little of it for each cellar. We were never being asked to choose. We only had to see that one thing can belong to two groups at once." The knot in Sorti's stomach came undone all at once. The squash wasn't a fight. It was an overlap, a thing sitting quietly in the middle, where two groups shared it. The moment the loops were drawn, the shouting turned into a plain, obvious picture. And pictures, Sorti discovered that day, she could sit with. Pictures didn't frighten her the way loud, shapeless arguments did. She walked to Discreet Quest when she was finally old enough to carry her own folding mat, because a place that studied patterns ought to have room for someone who thought in circles and loops. The mentor met her at the door and asked only one thing. "What is a set?" Sorti didn't answer with a speech. She knelt, unrolled her mat across the entryway stone, dropped a handful of pebbles into one circle and a handful of shells into another, and nudged a single specimen, a pebble that was also unmistakably a shell, into the lens between them. "A set is just a group of things you've decided to gather up," she said. "These are two of them. This bit in the middle is the part they share, the pieces that are in both. From here, I can do only three real things. I can pour both groups together and count everyone that lands in either circle. I can look at only the overlap, or I can find what one circle holds that the other doesn't." She sat back on her heels. "I don't need to be clever to do any of it. I only need to be able to see." The mentor studied the little mat for a long moment. "You belong here," he said.
Sorti's corner of the workshop filled quickly with kids who arrived clutching jumbles they couldn't entangle. One afternoon, a boy came in, gripping two crumpled lists, his knuckles pale. "It's the class trip," he said. "This is everyone who wants the museum. This is everyone who wants the aquarium. Some kids signed both, some signed neither, and I'm supposed to work out the total, and who to email, and..." He shook the papers as if they'd betrayed him. "It's just a mess." Sari recognized that shake. She had felt the same helplessness under a sorting table once. "Put them down," she said gently, and unrolled her mat. Two circles. Museum, aquarium. Read me one name. "Priya. She's on both lists. Then she's in the overlap, the middle." He set a token in the lens. "Next, Marcus, museum only. Museum circle, but only the part that doesn't overlap." One by one, the names became tokens, and the crumpled mess spread itself out into clear, quiet regions across the canvas. When both lists were empty, the mat simply showed it, plain as morning. "Now you can count," Sorty said. "Everyone in either circle is your total for the trip. That's the union. Both groups poured together. The kids in the middle will happily go either day, so email them last. And these two," she pointed to a pair of lonely tokens stranded on the bare mat, outside both circles, "signed up for nothing at all. You'd have emailed everyone and never noticed they were missing." The boy stared at the two abandoned tokens. "I would have forgotten them completely." He looked up, almost accusing. "How did you make it that easy?" "I didn't make it easy," Sorty said. "It was always this simple. It only looked impossible while it was crumpled up in your hands. The circles don't add anything to the problem. They just let you see what was already true."
Later, when the workshop had emptied and the light had gone gold and low, the boy lingered by the door with the two lists smoothed flat and one last question. "When it was folded up in my pocket," he said slowly, "it felt impossible. Like too much for anyone. But it was the same information the whole time, wasn't it? Nothing actually changed except that I could finally see it." Sorty thought about the flower dust and the loosening knot and her aunt's two loops drawn with one finger. "Nothing changed but the seeing," she agreed, rolling her mat up slow and careful and tucking it into her belt pouch. "That's most of the messes there are, you know. They're almost never too big. They're just not laid out yet. Find the circles. Ask each thing which ones it's in. And then watch the whole tight knot come loose." The boy nodded, and Sorty watched the tension go out of his shoulders and something ease across his whole face, the crowded look draining away into a slow, relieved quiet. She felt her own chest go warm and settled at the sight of it. The same soft loosening she'd first felt years ago under a sorting table, watching a frightening squash turn in the space of one drawn picture into something that simply belonged in the middle of two flower dust loops.
You've been listening to a Spark and Anvil chapter, written by the Spark and Anvil writing team for ages 9 to 14. Spark and Anvil is a 501c3 public charity. Apps stay free forever. Curriculum aligned to Sorty the Set Curator. Released under Creative Commons BYNCSA 4.0 for educational reuse. Visit Spark and Anvil for the full transcript.